キゴーゴーマッキゴーゴーマッキゴーゴーゴー。Welcome to TwerpCast number 13, Speedcast. This episode we will discuss speed, X, green meanies, pushers, pullers, poppers, and poopers. Or not. We will, however, discuss Speed Racer, the show, the movie, and maybe if you're really unlucky, we'll sing the theme a cappella. Now I'd like to introduce our guest host, a man so fast you'll never feel him coming. Ken Halloran, who voted the South most likely to secede. And no drum rolls are necessary for executive producer and rodeo clown, Jim Caswell. For him, 8 seconds is a long time.
And of course, that was Doug Zeitlin, the unfamous driver of the Mocking Five.
A car so small, I can't even have sex with myself in it.
Speed Racer actually started out as Mach Go 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 and was released in Japan in 1967. Inspired by Viva Las Vegas, a popular Elvis Presley movie at the time, and Goldfinger, the James Bond film of the time, the creators of Speed Racer wanted to merge both of these into one television program for the family.
Mach Go Go Go. First off, go is, of course, the English word to move forward. And as far as I can tell, English is the most commonly spoken second language in Japan. Go is also the Japanese word for the numeral 5. And Go was actually the lead character's name. His given name was Go.
Hence the letter G on the blue shirt he wears.
Yeah, it was basically a pun, which the Japanese are very good at.
Along with their haikus.
And their unagi.
Unagi. The anime series was quickly bought by Translux and redubbed for an American audience, changing the name to Speed Racer.
The show, for those of you who've been living in a cave for the last 40 years, revolves around the Racer family.
Yes, that's their last name, Racer. Don't ask, just accept.
The Racer family consists of Mom and Pops Racer as the parents, Rex Racer, the firstborn son, who is believed dead but actually becomes the mysterious Racer X. The middle-born son, whose first name is Speed, as in Speed Racer, and the third and final son, Spritel. Not actually sure what Spritel stands for.
Like Speed, I hope it's a nickname. A very annoying nickname.
The show also contains a supporting cast, Speed Racer's girlfriend, Trixie.
Hey, Mom, Dad, I want to travel around the world with my boyfriend as he races cars.
The show's mechanic, Sparky, and the ever-present Inspector Detector.
Oh, but you left out the most popular supporting character of all.
Chim Chim Cookies?
Yes, they had a pet chimpanzee.
But the name was just Chim Chim.
Go see it, you'll understand what Chim Chim Cookies are.
Chim Chim Cookies. That's the cast of characters. Pops Racer is a race car builder who designs and builds the famous race car, the Mach 5. Speed, his teenage son, is the one who takes the Mach 5 out on a regular basis against Pop's wishes and races in situations where his life is put in peril on a weekly basis.
No, Speed, you can't! And he always did, and he finished in the top 2 or 3, if not winning. Pops would forgive him, and the whole thing would happen again 3 episodes later. Which is the other thing about it. When I was watching it as a kid, what kind of weirded me out was the fact that it was actually serialized over 3 days, where instead of one 22-minute episode or whatever, we actually had 3 22-minute episodes to get the whole story, which drove me up the wall because I couldn't catch it every time.
That and the fact that there is an actual internal continuity. You don't know that Racer X is Speed Racer's brother at the beginning. You have to slowly find this out over a series of episodes.
One of the most interesting things about this series, though, was that it was one of the first examples of Japanese anime coming over to America and being widely accepted. This was before anime was popular in America.
Unlike a show called Gatchaman, which, when it was brought into America, had to be heavily edited for content and renamed Battle of the Planets, Speed Racer came across almost entirely in its original format.
I know they didn't have nearly the same kind of edits that Battle of the Planets did.
Around the same time as Speed Racer, a bit older anime series was also being brought over called Astro Boy. Look for that to come out in movie theaters in 2009. Not only was this a very popular show in the late 60s and early 70s, but it has still managed to last even to this day. It is still shown in syndication, and the entire series has been released on DVD.
from a little show that could, it really has become part of pop culture and certainly has the cult classic status.
From everything I've heard about the TV show, they did not do full cast recordings. They only had a handful of people recording all the parts. And they recorded them not entirely dissimilar to how we do our Gears and Geist stuff. You know, we come in individually. But because the animation pre-existed, they had to fit the timing to match the mouth movements on the cartoon, which is pretty difficult, especially when you're thinking about the fact that it was originally in Japanese, and it's a pretty fast language.
I think it's obvious that the three of us actually all enjoyed it. I would say it doesn't have a modern animation feel to it, but it's still an incredibly enjoyable show, and I would give it 4 pens in the pocket protector.
I think that I actually enjoy the show more now than I did back then. As a kid, I loved the gadgets and the buttons and all the fancy things that the Mach 5 could do, but the story almost went over my head as a kid. So as a kid, I would have actually given it probably 2 out of 4 pens. As an adult, I actually am able to get more out of it, so my enjoyment level has gone up in comparison.
As a kid, I remember enjoying it. I remember being at school, and me and my friend Chris would be sitting there debating, and we'd be trying to remember what each of the buttons on the steering wheel activated.
The show itself was fairly short-lived, but continued to enjoy strong pop culture consciousness. Much like the show Star Trek, which didn't end when the series was canceled, neither did Speed Racer.
One of the first ways that Speed Racer made a comeback was through comic books. Now comics were able to establish 2 series, The New Adventures of Speed Racer and Racer X in 1985. Wildstorm brought out Speed Racer in 1999. And, thanks to the movie, IDW just wrapped up a limited series called Speed Racer Chronicles of the Racer.
I remember very much enjoying New Adventures of Speed Racer, and I had completely forgotten until this podcast that I actually picked up the Racer X comics. Makes me want to go in my basement and pull them out now.
Then there was that music thing that they did in the late 80s, or was it early 90s? They basically took the Speed Racer theme song and edited it together into a dance remix.
Oh, yeah. The continuation of the adventures of Speed Racer was not limited to comic books, however. In 1993, the New Adventures of Speed Racer was released, and then promptly canceled 13 episodes later. The modernized and Americanized artwork just didn't catch on with the viewers.
Yeah, but I seem to recall around this time they started showing the original on MTV, of all places.
When it comes down to dollars and cents, the reruns of the original Speed Racer certainly had higher viewership and a lot more interest than the New Adventures of Speed Racer, the cartoon.
In 2002, Nickelodeon released another adaptation of Speed Racer called Speed Racer X. This one was based on Tetsunoko Productions' 1997 revival of Mach Gogogo.
Basically trying to repeat the formula from before.
Unfortunately, this one was canceled after only a few episodes aired because Nickelodeon cut the entire block of shows that it was attached to. That does not, however, stop them from attempting it once more. Nicktoons has just released a new series called Speed Racer: The Next Generation.
As bad as Speed Racer: The Next Generation sounds, it's only half as bad in reality. Speed Racer: The Next Generation follows the adventure of a racing academy is run by Spritel, who is now a senior. The top-performing student in the school is named X Racer, and he is believed to be Speed's only son. In the first episode, we are introduced to a new Speed, who we later find out is actually Speed Racer's hidden son that nobody knew about. The animation is actually incredibly poor. It's some sort of stylized, Americanized anime, flash animation, weird shit.
That's a technical term.
Which is just exasperated by the fact that when you see pictures of Speed Racer and the Racer family, it's actually done in the original style. So we have these characterizations of the new cast, and then the original animation of the original cast.
Screen captures, they're a terrible thing.
It's hard for me to discuss the theme song, although the lyrics have all remained the same. They've butchered the music. To people who have actually seen the original,
it's painful.
It's quite painful.
My big problem with this show is the fact that it's full of inconsistencies. It screams out that they wanted to do a remake of the old series, but at the same time, they felt a commitment to do a sequel. So Speed Jr. finds himself surrounded by the same types of people that his father was surrounded by. They go out of their way to try to put him in same situations. He's pitted against his brother. It has a lot of the same formula as the original series, but for some reason they didn't do the original series. They decided, oh, let's make it the Next Generation.
Before I went to see Speed Racer the movie, I did listen to one review, and this particular reviewer panned the movie pretty bad. One quote that he said about the Speed Racer movie applies very well to Speed Racer the Next Generation. Breaks the laws of physics, breaks the laws of motion, and it breaks the laws of thermodynamics.
For the record, the classic Speed Racer makes a mockery of physics.
One of my big pet peeves is the virtual track that the racers race on. If they had called it a wormhole track or a teleportation track, I may not have had as big of a problem with it. But the idea of a virtual track that, again, defies the laws of gravity, physics, it makes it very hard to overlook it.
Without getting really nitpicky and really picking on Speed Racer the Next Generation, which is not absolutely terrible, it's just not very good.
It's not Flash Gordon, the television series.
Nor is it Highlander the Source.
There should have been only one.
But the internal continuity laws that Speed Racer the Next Generation obeys make a mockery of the internal laws that Speed Racer obeyed. In Speed Racer, if you could believe a car could fly, in Speed Racer the Next Generation, you don't.
There's also the whole inconsistency about the age of the characters. They're all of legal age to drive and have obviously been driving for quite some time to have the skills that they have, but yet they all come across as being in their early to middle teens.
Which, when you consider the fact that Spritel is a senior, actually means that Speed's sons were born while he was a senior also.
In my opinion, Speed Racer the Next Generation is not nearly as good as an online series that was created to help sell toys called Speed Racer Lives. It's a much better series. There's 3 episodes that are available online. Just go in through our links page and you can find it under animation. So all of that brings us to the purpose behind this Twerpcast, the movie.
Here he comes, here comes Speed Racer, he's a demon on wheels. He's a demon and he's gonna be chasing after someone. He's coming at you and you better look alive. He's busy revving up the powerful Mach 5. And when the odds are against him and there's dangerous work to do, you bet your life, Speed Racer, we'll see you through. Go, Speed Racer! Go, Speed Racer! Go, Speed Racer! Go!
Now, if you're still with us after that... When I first heard about this movie, I was very excited. When I first started seeing clips of the movie, I became very, very afraid. I thought for sure this was just going to blow chunks. I thought it was going to be one of the worst things that I had seen all year. I am so glad I was wrong.
Well, again, when I heard it was Speed Racer, very excited. When I heard it was the Wachowski brothers, I was a little worried. Let's face their track record of their own directed movies. Matrix is in one of my top 5 movies of all time. Spectacular movie, followed by 2 duds that I don't know who wrote and directed, but it was not the same people. My fear was Speed Racer was going to be Matrix Revolution again. Fortunately, unfortunately, whichever way you look at it, not as good as The Matrix. Millions of times superior to The Revolutions.
I don't know what I thought when I first heard about it, because it was one of those that... I seem to recall hearing rumors about a live-action Speed Racer movie. I think throughout the 90s we'd hear the occasional rumors.
That's just the nature of the movie beast. Somebody purchases the rights to these characters. That doesn't mean next year there's going to be a movie. That means maybe in 10 years there's going to be a movie.
Which is why, when I first heard about it, I just was sort of like, okay, yeah, whatever. When I heard that Christina Ricci was going to be playing Tracy, I'm like, yeah!
Which is a good place to bring up the actors. How did you feel the actors did in portraying the characters from the 1960s television series?
I thought, as a whole product, the movie was excellent. I did not like Emil Hirsch. I thought that he was pretty flat and almost Hayden Christian-like.
Ooh.
That's kind of low, dude.
I thought John Goodman as Pops Racer was excellent. I think Susan Sarandon, Mom Racer was never in the old show that often. I mean, I remember seeing her in the opening credits and going, wait, who is that? I don't remember actually seeing her in an episode.
She was not a very prominent character. That being said, I thought Susan Sarandon did a great job of taking a truly background character and turning her into someone who was an integral part of the story.
I think they underused Christina Ricci as Trixie. I thought she was excellent.
I cannot agree with that more. I think more so than the fact that I was not impressed with Mr. Hirsch, I was more disappointed that Trixie wasn't in more of the movie.
Christina Ricci was excellent.
Not altogether surprised. I remember, 14-15 years ago when the three of us, Karen, Wendy, and Ted, went to go see Addams Family, and we were saying that she was a great actress when she was playing Wednesday Addams.
She has always been a very impressive actress.
And she's willing to do these cartoon-related movies.
This is my second favorite role I've ever seen her in, and I've liked her in a lot of stuff, but this is by far my favorite since she was Wednesday Addams.
She is a very strong performer, and it's nice to see her doing another family-friendly film.
What? The Opposite of Sex wasn't a family-friendly film?
I completely agree. I love Christina Ricci. Since the first time I saw her on screen, I knew she was going to be a star. It's just she was so good at bringing this two-dimensional flat character to a live three-dimensional person. It was just a shame that there wasn't more of her, that there wasn't just more dialogue and more for her to do.
I'm actually surprised that she isn't more renowned than she is. She is that high of a caliber of actress, in my opinion.
Well, the problem is, America loves Julia Roberts, who can't act to save her life, and not that they hate Christina Ricci, but the fact that she can act kind of, like, puts her out of the same class as Julia Roberts.
She's more than just a pretty face, so therefore, she's not good commodity.
As far as the other actors went, John Goodman was perfectly cast.
He was fantastic.
He was great. Spritel was great. Spritel practically stole.
He did steal the show. He was wonderful.
The chimpanzee was hilarious. Speaking of flat characters, though, I thought that Matthew Fox was a little flat playing Racer X.
I liked him.
I liked him. I think he was toned down a bit. I don't think he was flat acting. I think the character was toned down, and I didn't quite buy him as an action star.
The character of Racer X is kind of wooden. His whole shtick is, I'm this mysterious masked racer. He's a superhero who happens to drive a race car.
And that may actually be where I had the sticking point, because when he was Rex Racer towards the end, when he had the mask off, I actually thought that he was doing a better job.
With a mask on, he's a symbol. You don't want to be an individual with emotions if you're going out wearing a mask. The whole idea is you want to be this mysterious, unpredictable fighting machine.
To give a shout-out again to the Wachowski brothers who produced V for Vendetta, Hugo Weaving wears a mask through that entire movie, and I think he did a spectacular job of conveying emotions, whatever it was, whether it was anger or whether it was fear. You could feel it through the mask, which I agree is something that really Matthew Fox didn't capture.
Now, the actor who played young Rex early in the film, I liked him. I would have liked him better than Hirsch's Speed.
I would have liked him much better than Hirsch's Speed.
How did you feel this movie fit within Speed Racer continuity?
I think trying to fit it in the old continuity directly is not worth even trying. I found it consistent with the world we'd seen on TV. I thought it was a faithful adaptation. It felt like Speed Racer. It sounded like Speed Racer. The music was brilliant. But trying to fit it into the exact continuity, not worth doing. They changed things. There are things that were done differently. There were changes they made that honestly made more sense.
I remember when I was hearing the advanced information about this, they said that it was an origin story for Speed Racer. And I can see how they made that interpretation because they add the special gadgets to the Mach 5 in the movie. But that was done in the cartoon series as well, and it was done differently. Like Ken said, this isn't really something that fits into the continuity, but it fits into the spirit of the show.
The whole thing with Rex and Racer X, how they handled it, really does make a lot of sense. More sense than just the way it was on the TV show. The existence of the Mach 6 as the Formula One Grand Prix car. So it wasn't Speed's everyday car that was in every single race. They make sense.
That was one of the things that I was initially dreading, but once I actually saw the film, I really appreciated. When I saw the Mach 6, I was kind of worried that they were going to try to slip away from the whole Mach 5 thing, but the reason they did it and the way that they did it made a lot of sense. As opposed to just saying, well, you know, it's the Mach 5. The Mach 5 isn't important. We don't need it. We'll do our own interpretation of it, call it the Mach 6. They didn't do it that way.
One of the things that I really enjoyed about the movie is not only did the characters grow and evolve over the time, but the Mach 5 did. We got to see the Mach 4. We got to see the Mach 5. And we got to see the Mach 6. It wasn't just being thrown in. It was well thought out, and it drew the audience into the car's story, not just the character story. The car is another character. The movie is very true to the TV series. And if you could literally just take a cartoon and inflate it and make people real actors, that's what it feels like they did.
The movie is very four-color, very family-friendly. You're exactly right. It's like they took the cartoon and just put some life into it. One difference that they did make that I noticed was the fact that while the Speed Racer cartoon series was set in that modern day, with the exception of the robot bird, everything was kind of realistic to the 1960s, 1970s. This movie, to me, had a very futuristic feel to it. I didn't feel as though it was set in 2008. Maybe 2028, 2038.
My feeling on it was actually an alternate universe. It was really kind of weird, because it was only supposed to be 50 years from 1943, and yet they had all this futuristic technology and stuff, but it's just set in a world like 15 degrees off from our world.
Roger Allam as the big bad guy.
He did a good job as a big bad guy. One of the things that this movie did, they kind of pushed it down your throat, is big business, bad. Small independents, good.
I thought he did a great job of pushing the over-the-topness that was always classic for Speed Racer bad guys.
He was perfectly over the top. Not to the point where he was unbelievable in the role, but enough so that it was a caricature of the bad guy, and it was wonderful.
I really liked his two-facedness. His pleasantness at the beginning, and then after a while, his true nature came out. I thought he did that really well.
And even when he was being two-faced, you were still able to look at him and go, okay, this guy is just way too slick, way too oily to really be the nice guy that he's trying to make himself out to be.
I like the fact, story-wise, Pops Racer knew that he was slick and knew that he was not a good man, but had learned from his mistakes with Rex. And he was like, if this is what Speed wants, I'm going to make concessions because Speed is my son, and my son's more important than my company.
Again, a perfect example of character development. The differences between how Pops Racer deals with Rex in comparison to Speed. It shows that he's a man who can learn from his mistakes.
The one thing I remember reading in some of the reviews I read was at least one person was complaining about the number of races in the movie. Which, okay, it's Speed Racer. He's in races.
That actually really surprises me that somebody would say there were too many races in a Speed Racer movie. That's almost like saying there's too many fights in a Kung Fu movie. That just boggles my mind.
Well, I think they were people who were annoyed with the computer-generated cars and all that, too. For a movie about race car driving, none of the cast was ever behind the wheel of a real car anytime, anywhere in that movie.
Oh, no. Almost the entire movie was green screen. I didn't have a problem with that. You got a movie like Speed Racer where the races fit naturally into the flow of the story, that they're actually important and develop the characters in the story. Then you get a movie similar to The Phantom Menace where there's a pod race that lasts for an hour and has nothing to do with the rest of the story. It didn't develop the story at all.
Even in Viva Las Vegas, the race at the end of the story, which was made in point of the story, goes on for a while and isn't that interesting to watch.
Chases can be extremely interesting, but look at something like The French Connection. I mean, it developed the car chase formula. That's a really incredibly cool car race.
What's up, Doc? It's another one.
All of those put the pod race to shame.
We mentioned the fact that most of this movie was filmed against green screen and CGI. It has a very anime feel to it. I don't think that they could have pulled that off without it being CGI.
This movie couldn't have been done, period, without CGI. But as I heard another reviewer say, it was really switching one form of animation for another form of animation. I don't see the problem with that. It was well done in the 60s as animation. It was well done in the 2000s as animation.
The animation lines that they used in the fight scene for Speed Racer, I felt as though it distracted from the actual fighting.
Yeah, but go back and watch a fight scene on the old show.
The fight scene had a lot of good action to it. It had a lot of good comedy to it.
And it had gingerbread cookies.
But like I said, for me, the speed lines were almost distracting from everything else that was going on. I understand why they were in there. I just thought that they could have foregone that homage.
I'm in the middle. I didn't hate them. I didn't like them. I think they were really just the Wachowski brothers' speed racer version of Bullet Time.
I like the fact that they included a race that went through like three different environments just because they used to do that all the time on the old show. It was just a minor little story point, but it was there.
This definitely had all the ingredients of the old series. It had the...
It had the rally races, had the helicopter flights, had the gunfights, had the fight scenes, had Pops Racer going, "No, Speed, you can't race!" Had Chimchin and Spritel hiding in the trunk of the Mach 5.
The one thing that they added that I found kind of weird were a lot of the races were done on these life-size Hot Wheels sets.
So, going with your favorite rating system, how many pens in the pocket protector, Doug?
I'd say it was 3 pens in the pocket protector. I really, really enjoyed the movie. There were a couple of distracting things. Mostly it was Emil Hirsch's kind of flat performance. His performance was the most distracting thing for me. Other than that, I thought it was a really fun movie.
I enjoyed it. I want to see it again someday. Not necessarily right away, but I do want to see it again someday. It'll probably end up in my DVD collection in a few months.
I agree. This movie's going to definitely go into the DVD collection. And I also agree with Doug. 3 out of 4 pens in the pocket protector. I enjoyed it. There's always room for improvement, but it was far better than I had anticipated it being, and I was exceptionally pleased with it. Now, at this point in the broadcast, we would normally hit upon our upcoming Twerp productions. Honestly, there hasn't been that many developments since our last Twerp cast, so we're going to do something slightly different this time.
Mercifully, this does not involve us telling you about what's going on in our real lives, which is why there are no new developments.
Instead, we're going to spend a couple of minutes talking about other summer blockbusters. Doug and I both went and saw Iron Man last week. I thought it was great.
I thought it was spectacular. It blew me away. It was so much better than I ever expected.
I really do believe that this was the best Marvel movie that's come out yet.
Does Robert Downey Jr. have it in him to be able to play this character who's a womanizing alcoholic?
Yes. Yes, he does.
Okay.
I think this is Robert Downey Jr.'s best performance. He really does show off his acting chops in this movie.
I really think he was trying to show off, not just for the directors, but for the audience, to say, I can be a franchise.
And he does. He pulls it off fantastically.
Other than the fact that it's the name of the property, in the context of the movie, why does he go with the name Iron Man?
It's mislabeled in the newspaper. He's like, well, technically it's not iron, it's titanium gold alloy, but I'll go with it.
May is a very strong month for movies this year. We had Iron Man, we had Speed Racer. Next week is Prince Caspian. The week after that is Indiana Jones and the Temple of... and the Kingdom of Crystal Skulls.
Those are the A-list blockbusters, but even the movies that aren't the A-list blockbusters still are going to have a very strong release in May. Like What Happens in Vegas. They've got Ashton Kutcher and Cameron Diaz in a movie. That's going to sell that movie no matter how bad it is.
Some other movies that are coming out this summer. The Happening. It's the new M. Night Shyamalan film coming out June 13th. The Incredible Hulk is also coming out on June 13th. Get Smart is June 20th. Another comic book tie-in movie, Wanted, comes out June 27th. Hancock, which I'm really looking forward to. For having not heard of this movie 2 months ago, I am really anticipating seeing Hancock. Hancock comes out July 2nd. Hellboy 2, The Golden Army, comes out July 11th.
Another comic book movie?
Dark Knight comes out July 18th. But like you said, there are also some quote-unquote B-movies out there that's going to get a lot of press, too. You Don't Mess with the Zohan is the new Adam Sandler film. Him playing an Israeli soldier who comes to America to become a hairstylist. What kind of wacky concept is that? But it looks like it'd be funny.
The Love Guru with Mike Myers is coming out June 20th. I'd hardly call that a B-movie.
The only reason that I would classify Love Guru as a quote-unquote B-movie is the fact that it's going up directly against Get Smart, same weekend.
Oh, that's rough for Get Smart.
I'd actually call Get Smart the B-movie in that context.
Steve Carell's hot right now, but frankly, you can't touch Austin Powers.
But that's just it. If it was an Austin Powers movie going up against Get Smart, you're right. That would be really tough competition. Love Guru, though, is a different character, different concept, and not every Mike Myers film has been an out-of-the-ballpark hit. Obviously, as we're looking forward to these movies, we're going to try to podcast on as many as we can. Fair warning, we're going to have a busy summer. We want to thank you for joining us here at TorpCast.
As always, we encourage your feedback. Please write to jim@torponline.net.
TorpCast has been a presentation of Timewell Electronic Recording Productions, copyright 2008.
Go, Speed, go!